अरे दान देने इशू के अंदर दान आने जुगे आ दिक्कत जुगे दान तुम्हारे सेवी सेवी थोड़े समले थोड़े निचे के तो समले आ चंदोर चेचे नमन चेपा ला इंटेंट चेपा चीनी कुवरे चीजें इंटेंट चेपा चीनी लुटेंटी आंधी मिलियन मुझे सेदे तेरे गांव तो ले ये दिव्य मिलुटेंटी ने पुतुम तो बात सांती भी लेकिन क्या बात चल रही है दिन तेरे या अन्य आने जगह निम्न करें चीना जुटू है ये चीज़ ऐसे नहीं चीकना जगह दिन तेरे ने ये जगह मोटे रचे तंग तो लेकिन दिन अंजना तो दिन ही लेकिन तेरे या दिन क्या बात चं चे तेरे ना मामूबे ने यहाँ जगह न जिन जगह दिन तेरे की शुगोरेस दिन ऐसा जी另外一些是你觉得没出什么重要的，你说不过面，准确怎么样？俺这个，哦，你去每年面接啊，俺这没让你们把三千来的过过来，都做都写过来。第三路的接班人啊，这个接班起码以内，他才没过往突突的。俺这里来呢，立即用过来。俺这样工农江水生意生意团的工农的接，这你们接班人呢，俺那上级过往特别居然吃过来，也是去。但第四年呢，第二个三毛的杨南杨都当过的，三年子学费低过嘛，学过了嘛。
Good afternoon. So this morning we looked at the fourth verse, which points out that, as we'd heard previously, that in order to achieve our desired state of happiness, we need to transform our way of thinking, change our mind through cultivating wholesome courses and eliminating unwholesome ways of thinking. But in order to do that, we require a specific basis, namely a precious human rebirth. And a precious human rebirth is characterized not merely by being born as a human being, but requires a number of other favorable circumstances. Those were mentioned this morning, and all of those we recognize we have attained. So we can therefore have the required basis to transform our mind and overcome suffering. Whilst that is the case, though, we also need to look beyond this life, to lives beyond this one, and ensure that we create the causes to have repeated good rebirths life after life. So therefore, we need to accumulate the causes that will lead to future good rebirths. Those causes we looked at this morning too. The primary cause to attain rebirth in a higher realm is that of ethical restraint, and we spoke about what that is. And then in addition, to ensure that we have not just a good rebirth, but have all the required favorable circumstances, we need to cultivate the mind of generosity, minds of patience, and joyous perseverance. And those four coupled with prayer for a precious human rebirth. And moreover, in conclusion this morning, I mentioned that accumulating those four causes plus prayer with a motivation to achieve a good rebirth, the power of that motivation will lead to the attainment of that result. But if we engage in the cultivation of those same causes, but we have a far greater, more powerful motivation, a motivation to achieve enlightenment for the sake of all sentient beings, those same causes become a cause for Buddhahood. And then finally, I mentioned how that in order to radically transform our mind, which is what we endeavor to do to attain a state of lasting happiness, merely reflecting sporadically in the way that has been outlined is insufficient. One needs to do so repeatedly over a sustained period. And we mentioned this morning how to do so in terms of cultivating a motivation and keeping that alive and vibrant throughout one's day, and ensuring that it thereby guides our interactions with others. So this, in brief, is what we looked at this morning. Moving to the fifth verse, the mundane concerns of this present life, despite an unending struggle, remain unfinished when the enemy, the army of the Lord of Death, arrives. from now, ensure that you will be without regret, Jampal Jack. The mundane concerns of this present life. This then refers to the various activities that keep us so occupied. From when we were born to and shortly thereafter, we embarked on our process of education, thereafter engaged in contributing to society through the work we chose to go into. These and many other activities that keep us busy day and night, keep our mind occupied and thereby govern our speech and our physical behavior. These are the mundane concerns that are referred to. And these activities we engage in, as mentioned previously, they have as their goal largely the overcoming of problems that we encounter in this one life, and thereby trying to achieve happiness, pleasurable experiences, only though with a focus on this one life. This expression, mundane concerns of this present life, refers to these activities that keep us so preoccupied, but with a focus on only this one life. This attitude, or this outlook, focused on just this one life, is a particularly narrow-minded approach. It's an approach that ignores our incredible potential. This focus on the mundane concerns, the mundane pleasures, and the mundane problems of this life, this way of thinking dominates us and leads to all these activities, never-ending activities that dominate us so. And from this, yes, we experience some happiness, and sometimes we go through life with greater periods of happiness, but these always pass. And when you look back over your life, when you've achieved great goals, the pleasure that has been achieved dissipates. And this happens continuously. And it can happen for such a variety of reasons. Sometimes we just wake up in a bad mood. Other times we meet someone and we have an unfortunate encounter and our happiness is lost. Sometimes we make wrong decisions and our whole life can be, go in a different trajectory. Other times, something unexpected may befall us. So in this way, we come, when we look at our lives and we observe the world around us, we recognize that despite how busy we find ourselves, people do not achieve in this way happiness that lasts. And any happiness that is achieved quickly dissipates. The mundane concerns of this present life, despite an unending struggle, remain unfinished. Here, I hardly need to point this out to you, because this is everyone's lived experience. Everyone here has a to-do list. That to-do list has yet to be completed. As we tick off one or two activities, three or four seem to get added on. And even when we are enjoying a pleasurable time, maybe out with our friends, we can hardly enjoy it because we know there's still more to be done and our mind may be drawn to something else. And all too often, we live our life full of activity, looking forward to a holiday when I can finally relax, but we return from that exhausted. We hope that in one's retirement, then I can have a life of abundant pleasure, but this seems to be seldom experienced by anyone. So when we look at our life, we see despite this, this activity, our busy minds, we never really experience happiness. And when we do, so quickly it passes. These activities never seem to end.
From our perspective of people looking to transform our minds, the way we should be approaching this is to look at our life, see how busy we have been throughout our life. What have we been busy with? All these activities, all these thoughts are focused on achieving the mere pleasures of this one life and overcoming the problems of this one life. Everything we do or say or think is motivated to achieve pleasure and to overcome problems of this one life. And despite being so busy making so many plans, have we yet achieved this? All the pleasures we have achieved have passed. Problems once again returned. The great loss is this precious human rebirth that we recognize we have achieved. Its potential remains unfulfilled. This great treasure we have hidden in our home, we have yet to utilize to achieve lasting happiness. What we need to do, and the purpose of this verse, is to look at our life and lift our gaze beyond the mere pleasures of this one life and look beyond this life. And not look merely to a future life, but beyond the realms of samsara, recognizing that freedom from this process, from this wheel of suffering, this is within our capacity to achieve. So here, really, what we're trying to do with these meditations in this section is to lift our gaze beyond this life to see what our human potential really can lead to a freedom beyond what otherwise can be attained, freedom beyond samsara. This is possible for us. So here, we strive to lift our gaze. The mundane concerns of this present life, despite an unending struggle, remain unfinished when their enemy, the army of the Lord of Death, arrives. This term, an enemy, understanding, we should understand it in a broader way. Generally, we use the term to refer to whatever causes us problems and difficulties in our life. So that would be something we would call an unwanted circumstance. We here would refer to it as an enemy. So it's in a broad sense, it refers to whatever brings us unwanted circumstances. But here, it's being used in a more poetic way. The enemy, the army of the Lord of Death. The army of the Lord of Death refers to our uncontrolled rebirth. What will, in other words, that when this life ends is something we don't have much control of, we don't have control over, nor where we will be reborn. And what this is, it's not some external enemy, but it's actually the contaminated karma on our continuum that we have accumulated through our own afflictions. This is the enemy that leads to us taking uncontrolled death and uncontrolled rebirth, remaining though bound in the suffering realms of samsara. Therefore, relate to this though as poetry rather than thinking that there is some external lord of death.
But just as in warfare, one does need to arm oneself, one does need to create a plan, and one does need to train. So the analogy works well here, especially when we understand the meaning is the true enemy are the afflictions on our continuum, as well as our karmic imprints, our negative karmic imprints. So we need to make a plan, arm ourselves through training, and in this way, prepare. Because when our death will come is something we have no idea. How our death will come, in what manner, we also have no idea. And it's not something that we can prevent. There is no weapon, there is nothing we can buy to prevent our death. Even requesting great spiritual teachers, they cannot prevent our death coming. So therefore, we need to utilize whatever remains of this life to prepare for when our death does come. The verse ends with, from now, ensure that you will be without regret, Jampo Drak. So again, Jampo Drak was a hard disciple to the author, Gendan Gyatso. Here he is being told, prepare now, don't delay, don't procrastinate. When you have no idea when death will come. You cannot say with any certainty whether it's just a few days or a few months or some years away. This is unknown. And if you do not utilize what remains well of your life, preparing for future rebirths, developing yourself spiritually, not fulfilling your potential, when death does come, you'll die with regret. You'll die with regret because this life's potential will not have been fulfilled.
제
What is the preparation that needs to be done then? Well, it's exactly as mentioned this morning. Training your mind in ethics, developing this outlook through the determination of, I will not bring harm, thereby restraining one's mind from either a dominance of self-interest or of thoughts of harm towards others. And this way, one also restrains one's speech and one's behavior. Secondly, training in generosity, the wish to give. Yeah, if one has an abundance, one shares this. And if one has skills and talents, certainly friendship, one shares this with others. Generating the wish to give of oneself to others, to share of oneself with others. And thirdly, that was the training in patience, to recognize that we will encounter difficulties, unwanted circumstances, people will interact with us in unwanted ways. That's okay. That's to be expected. I don't need to let that dominate my mind. Rather, if it's another person, see them as being valuable, and rather respond to them in a wise manner, in a gentle manner. And fourthly, that of joyous perseverance, recognizing where we are progressing well and take delight in that. And where we see we could have done better, recognize that now I know this, next time I will respond more skillfully and commit to continuing. And then lastly, that of prayer. So these five causes then are what we need to train our mind in. And to the extent we've trained our mind well in this way, when this life ends, we'll move from this body without regret. We won't look back on our life and think, I wish I'd lived my life differently. I wish I hadn't wasted quite so much time. Because the purpose of these meditations that we've looked at, certainly in this verse, but coupled with the previous verse, is firstly to recognize what we've achieved. Secondly, to lift our gaze beyond this life. And thirdly, to bring about a sense of urgency, a sense that we need to utilize what remains well of this life because we don't know when it will end, and thereby overcome procrastination. What we're trying to do is lift our gaze from our current state of being dominated by achieving this life's pleasures and overcoming this life's problems, and rather to focus on the attainment of a goal of real value, to live our life thereby in a meaningful way, not overcome by mere pleasures and mere problems, all of which will pass. And in terms of how to relate to our death, for someone who has trained their mind well, when their death comes, they may, if they are in a position to see if their death comes in a way that they can see it approaching, they'll be relaxed about it. Even if their body is failing, and maybe even their mind is failing, they'll be relaxed about their approaching death, because they will know they've lived their life well, or at least the last period they've lived well. And in this way, they'll recognize that they've created the causes for good rebirth, and thereby they'll have confidence that a good rebirth is coming. And with that confidence, they'll recognize all that's happening is their consciousness is moving from this body and soon will arise in a new body. That new body will be without these aches and pains and feelings of illness. And this then, with the confidence that their next rebirth will be a good one, they will approach death with a relaxed mind and free from regret. But to do so, to have the confidence that when death comes, that we can with ease let go without regret. This comes about independence on us now, lifting our gaze from all these minor problems and concerns that dominate us so, and letting them go. seeing them in their true light, not allowing them to overwhelm us, but lifting our gaze to achieving goals beyond this life. And again, the trainings to focus our mind on are those of ethics, which comes about with a sincere determination, I will not harm anyone. I will not add to their burden of suffering. I will not add to their burden of pain. Rather, than generosity, I will give of myself to others. I will engage with others in a way that only eases their burden of pain and suffering. I will be a source of joy in this world. And then thirdly, that of patience. And whatever I encounter, I will encounter hardships. Sometimes I will be, my own mind will be a bit dispirited, while I encounter others who are suffering in a manifest way. I will not allow myself to be overwhelmed by this. I will not allow myself to get caught up in this life's mundane pleasures and concerns, but rather keep my mind focused on achieving a goal of true value. So that's patience. And then fourthly, and I'll, with mindfulness, I'll be aware of my progress. I'll take delight in all my successes, and where I don't live up to my expectations or I know I could do better, recognize this and set my mind on continuing to grow and develop. So in this way, we train ourselves to return to the analogy of the verse, like a soldier, developing our skills, developing our weapons and our armory, developing our skills so that whatever we encounter, whatever enemy, how well trained they may be, we can do so with confidence, knowing that we have prepared well. A number of times I've encouraged you to train your mind in ethics, committing not to bring harm to others, no matter what circumstances you find yourself in. And this is imperative to do for the reasons that have been mentioned. But the reality is, those people that you'll encounter in society, not all of them are guided by a similar ethical approach. Sometimes you'll meet others who will lie to your face. You'll meet people who want to deceive you, to take advantage of you. You'll meet people
who are angry and take it out on you. Or they may be full of pride and talk down to you. A training in ethics in society such as ours is difficult but essential. It means that when we encounter such circumstances, this is when we need to rely on our training, the teachings we've heard that, and that we have integrated in our own daily meditations. So that when we do encounter people like this, we are aware of it, we recognize it, but we take responsibility for our own mind. We don't immediately respond by pointing a finger at them, but we guard our own mind, recognizing that the quality of our own mind, that is our responsibility. So here we ensure that what arises within our mind is an ethical response. We can then respond to the person before us in a way that is honest and straightforward, in a way that doesn't inflame the situation, in a way that deals with the situation in a skillful manner. And to the extent that you have trained yourself, this will become you'll be ever more habituated to responding in this way. You will feel a sense of strength within you. You will not feel weak and oppressed by this person because you are in charge of your own mind. You are not responding in a way where you are out of control and later thinking, oh, I wish I'd said this or I wish I'd done that. Rather, your mind will stay calm and you'll be able to think clearly and respond skillfully. And in this way, deal with challenging circumstances in a way that is skillful. So in our society, where we encounter a variety of people every day, the trainings in ethics and patience are of great importance. To the extent that one develops an ethical outlook, one will naturally interact with others in a way that is honest and straightforward, and will not take advantage of others, not deceive others, not speak badly about others, and certainly not from a position of taking delight in looking at the faults of others. Rather, one will naturally have a warm feeling towards others, an affinity towards others. So training well in ethics and patience will ensure that minds such as frustration, annoyance, anger, these will not be close companions, even when we encounter challenging circumstances. So here I encourage you, in your meditations, to cultivate an ethical outlook, and as you develop that, also to meditate well on patience. Moving to the next verse. If even I had to experience the sufferings of the three lower realms, I would find it unbearable. As you have no assurance of not being born there again, abandon non-virtuous karma, Jampaldrak. So just change one word in the fourth line, action to the Sanskrit karma.
Kewa len sa ki, dendro la ma kewa ina, le dan nyomo wangi kesa di karsana, nyawa yida
When our death comes, it's something we have no control over. Our karma will determine when this life ends. Moreover, where we are reborn, this is also something we have no control over. We cannot choose where we will be reborn. Our karma dictates where we will be reborn. There are only two directions we can take when death comes. We can either continue in the higher realms as we are now, or fall into the lower realms. But whichever direction we take, it's not something we can decide on. Our karma will direct us. And if the most powerful imprint on our continuum that ripens at the time of death is one that is virtuous, we'll continue as we are in this life, in the higher realms, be reborn again as a human or even as a god. Or if it's a non-virtuous imprint that ripens at the time of death, that will send us to the lower realms and take rebirth either in the body of an animal or a spirit or in the hell realms. But this is something we do not have it's not a decision we can make when our death comes. But the strength of the karma on our continuum, or the karma on our continuum, is what will dictate where we take rebirth. As we know from our own lives and what we observe, humans certainly can experience tremendous suffering. But whatever suffering can be experienced in the human realm pales into significance when compared to the suffering of the lower realms, which is, when compared to the human existence, unbearable in comparison. The karma on our continuum that determines where we will be reborn in our future rebirths. And if we were to fall in the lower realms, not only would the suffering be incomparable to what humans can experience, there is also the grave problem of, because of the strength of the overwhelming nature of the suffering in the lower realms, beings there are unable to identify the problems, come up with solutions, and implement those solutions. It's just not possible in the lower realms. One is stuck in situations where one suffers continuously and can do nothing about it. Whereas in our situation, as a human being in the higher realms, because we suffer, but have great intelligence. We can recognize our suffering and we can think about its causes, come up with solutions and implement those solutions. This can be likened to a superpower that we hold in our hands. We have this incredible intelligence and we can utilize it to transform our trajectory of future lives by recognizing the causes which are virtuous and therefore will lead to good rebirths and accumulating those, and recognize the causes which are non-virtuous and will lead to suffering and avoid accumulating those. So therefore, in this life, we do have the capacity to accumulate causes that will ensure good rebirths in the future.
If you imagine yourself in a situation where you have to leave where you are, you have no choice, you have to leave. And you have a choice of a destination. You don't have a choice about going, but you have a choice of destination. For the one, you don't need to do anything. You will just go there. The other requires a lot of preparation. But the one where you don't need to prepare and you can just travel there without impediment is pretty awful. It's a place that no one would want to go. There are just problems and difficulties there. The other place is quite wonderful, but it requires quite some preparation. Knowing that, but finding yourself in such a position, it's clear what choice you'll make. You'll put in the effort that is required right now to ensure that you can go somewhere that is peaceful and you can abide happily, as opposed to just continuing in a distracted way, but then knowing you're going to end up somewhere quite awful. So this is similar to the position we find ourselves in now, or now whilst we are in a position of having some choice.
In the third line, as you have no assurance of not being born there, again. In past lives, we certainly would have experienced the sufferings of the lower realms, but we are not there now. However, just merely not being there now gives us no assurance that we do not have such negative karmic imprints on our continuum that can still lead to rebirth there.
아니네 대주 나서서는
How then does one ensure that one does not fall into the lower realms but attains good rebirths? As mentioned yesterday, we see here in the fourth line, abandon non-virtuous karma. This is the method. Refrain from non-virtue. And accompanying this, engage in the accumulation of virtue. In other words, strengthen our virtuous ways of thinking and weaken any habituations that we have to non-virtuous ways of thinking. And that was mentioned yesterday in when we were looking at the views of Buddhism being dependence arising, dependence on causes. Every desired result comes about independence on the accumulation of its respective causes. Wanting to attain a good rebirth comes about independence on the accumulation of the respective causes. And not only that, the strength of the cause determines the strength of the outcome. A powerful virtuous cause is what is required to lead to a good rebirth. A powerful non-virtuous cause will lead to the lower realms. If it's a particularly powerful cause, it will lead to rebirth in the hells. If it's a middling non-virtue, it will lead to rebirth as a spirit, and a weaker non-virtue as an animal. Likewise, too, in terms of the strength of virtuous causes leading to rebirth as a human or as a god. So therefore, we determine here that to engage in the technique of abandoning non-virtuous ways of thinking and cultivating virtuous ways of thinking. And the purpose of this presentation here is to add strength to our determination to not merely strengthen our virtuous ways of thinking, but make them powerful and dominant within us.
And 旅游过年，俺那县里啊，县有古么家老古么过呀，县里啊，旅游过年县里啊，策划些呀，今天那个老人们老说吧，接吧，那俺这个县就说，就把老说吧，接旅游过年接吧，那，对吧？就咱利用那个工作的了，县里那边什么策划什么过年啦，第二一级开米，对吧？就咱这样子，对吧？对了，俺给对吧？旅游对吧？一级提拔送些过来，就咱。
旅游一级提拔些的，县里啊，策划三百些了，那不也三百多个一级提拔来了过？第一个过年那些，俺有过年吃素些的，俺现在感觉些吧，这些吧的，他说俺那俺给提拔来说了。等你现在那边三百第一个过年那些旅游过年，县里接了过啊，咱县里啊，这那不也策划几把旅游先少交罢了，县里你都当下了什么？结尾呢，旅游没干完的是，这是帮过过来的。
这是帮外头呢，可是跟那是帮过来是呢，这些些的嘞，律师另外一些什么，现在才把这个没三百三百地当真，三百地给搞过的，第三百搞过，现在另外一些研究的没出什么些个那个这个没三百个三百地当的，另外一些什么地把的帮过来，帮完咱的，那你刚说的是呢，俺说的几个具体啥个嘛的，俺吃过嘛的这，现在咱另外一些研究的没研究的没出什么重要的。
An illustration of non-virtue is the mind of anger. Merely having the mind of anger dominant, this is non-virtuous. And then this can be expressed through our speech, where we shout at others, speak to them in a harsh manner, or expressed physically through physical conflict or stealing from others. This is what we need to abandon. The way to abandon non-virtue is to change our mind, transform our mind, developing the determination, I will not harm others. I will not harm others through my physical conduct, my way of communicating, and recognizing that this comes from a way of thinking. This is what I'll take control of, my own mind. I will ensure that my mind is not in the direction of harming others, because if it is, I will end up lying to others, speaking to others in a harsh manner or divisively, or my physical behavior may be harmful, such as stealing from others or engaging in physical conflict or sexual misconduct. All of this comes from non-virtuous ways of thinking. This is what I will abandon. And the way to abandon non-virtuous ways of thinking is to cultivate, to strengthen our habituation to virtuous ways of thinking. The more habituated we are to virtuous ways of thinking, proportionately, non-virtuous ways of thinking will weaken. And in this way, as we strengthen our virtuous ways of thinking, we are accumulating causes that lead to good rebirths, and we are turning away from accumulating causes that would otherwise lead to rebirth in the lower realms. So there's this relationship between the two. As we strengthen our habituation to virtuous ways of thinking, not only then does our physical behavior and our speech follow on by being virtuous, but we ever less think in a non-virtuous way and therefore act in a non-virtuous way, and therefore the causes we accumulate are primarily virtuous.
Jambakomia,
Svart mentioned a number of virtuous minds to cultivate, primarily ethical restraint as well as generosity, patience, and joyous perseverance. And these are crucially important. There's another section of a group of virtuous minds to cultivate, such as love and compassion. The mind of love is the sincere wish, may others be happy. And the mind of compassion, the mind of love is may all beings be happy. And the mind of compassion, may all beings be freed of suffering. So these two are virtuous minds, and they come from a feeling of closeness towards all others. Here, we are building on the minds that we have cultivated thus far. Thus far, we have lifted our mind, trying to lift our mind to first recognize what we have achieved with this precious human rebirth, and then trying to lift our mind beyond the mundane concerns of this life, to look for goals beyond this life. Now, we're lifting our mind further, broadening our vision beyond achieving our own happiness and overcome our own suffering, to recognizing the situation others find themselves in too, and generating the thought, the welfare of others is my responsibility. Where I can, I will help others experience more happiness. Where I can, I'll help others overcome problems and suffering. So here, we are broadening our mind, taking our concern beyond ourselves, but to all people. So this is an incredibly powerful, these are incredibly powerful virtuous minds to cultivate.
And this is Shasa, the Nigi, and it's a Zuki. Tsurum Sumia, that's a Vokom Yatun Sumia, the Gay, and it's a Sanyu Chimney, the Yu Don Anma, Nusun Shagures, Jesan, the Nigi, Sanyu Chimney, the Yusun Shagi, the Yakasan, and the Gay.
These virtuous minds of ethical restraint, generosity, patience, love and compassion, these were all originally taught by Buddha Shakyamuni. And he taught from his own experience. So these teachings are called the sutras, the actual teachings from the Buddha, and referred to in the second verse. And Buddha taught from his own experience. And then great masters who followed in subsequent lives encountered these teachings, cultivated them within themselves, and in this way became great masters in that they had given rise to similar realizations and taught it to their students. So here we are encountering these teachings from Gendun Gyatso, who is teaching faithfully the same teachings of Buddha Shakyamuni. And so here, with this unbroken lineage of teachings from Buddha Shakyamuni through great masters like Gendun Gyatso to our present day, we now have the opportunity to encounter.
Some of the 그게 제베네다 어두스네 레레스테즈나 당이 루마 이스묘샤라 니네바 싸오기네 지금에 선배 삼나다 다 랑기 안지게 가리토네나 샨야 즉 최후야다 샨야 진바다 등이 뜻티 로고지에 지기야 선배 삼다 이게 아주 즉 어두스네 삼다베네 뒤지 고야메디게 지그리 인지 즉 되네 인장도 두체 차지 다니다 양 즉 숨다네 양시 다베네 기디나다 삼네 양시 코르디가 소르지게
ཁྱི ཕྱད མ ཁ ལ ས ནས ཡ གེ ད སྐ ཡ མ ད སམ ལོ ཡ ནས 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 ཡ ནས
The way all great masters trained Buddha from Buddha Shakyamuni right to the present day is through gathering knowledge, integrating it within themselves. And to do so, what is crucial is to engage in this process repeatedly over a sustained period. Because what we are trying to do is become habituated to a virtuous, wholesome way of thinking and break our habituation to unwholesome ways of thinking. Our own minds are our own responsibility, and each of us, we know our own mind better than others can. Your task is to look at your mind, see what your habituations, where your habituations are stronger. When you encounter certain circumstances, how do you habitually respond? What naturally arises within you? From that, you can see where what your imprints are from past lives, from this life. There you can recognize where are the areas you need to focus on to strengthen the good qualities you have, and other areas you need to focus on to weaken unwholesome habituations that you may have. The way to do so is, of course, in formal meditation like you're doing here, and hopefully like you do daily at home. But don't leave your training only on the meditation cushion. If you are serious about changing your mind, you need to do much more than just formal meditation practice. It needs to become your habituated way of thinking. So this means you have your daily meditation, but then you also recall what you've meditated throughout the day. So when you've got a few minutes either making a coffee at home or when you're sitting quietly drinking it, no need then to distract yourself by watching or engaging with something of no real importance. Take those few minutes and go inside and look at your mind. And then remind yourself of the teachings. Remind yourself of what you meditated on that morning. Think to yourself, I will not harm others. I do not want to be the kind of person who talks badly about others or who engages easily in conflict with others. This is not who I want to be. Because when my mind is like that, I know I am unhappy. I can feel that I am suffering. And I also know that I'm causing others to suffer. I'm adding to their own burden of difficulties. I do not want to be that kind of person. And then recall situations, perhaps earlier that day or the previous day, where you did respond in such a way. And then think to yourself, what would have been a more skillful way of responding? And in this way, role play. And think, so when I encounter a similar situation in the future, how can I respond more skillfully? And similarly, where you did encounter a difficult situation and you did respond skillfully, recognize that, rejoice in that, and reaffirm that that was a good way to respond. And when I encounter a similar situation, I will respond in a similar way again, and strengthen your habituation. So this thinking you can do whilst making the coffee, while enjoying the coffee. It doesn't only have to be done on the cushion. So when approaching meditation like this, where you do a formal practice, but you take this way of thinking and you repeat it in brief moments throughout the day, this brings on rapid transformation. This is how one builds habits. So this is presented in society. It's nothing radical, but this is how one changes one's mind. And the illustration I gave there was to do with ethics, but so too with generosity. When one thinks about the person I want to be is someone who is ethical, who does not respond in a way that is non-virtuous, but actually I want to give of myself. I want to ease the suffering of others. I want to naturally be there for them in any way that I can. And here I think about the benefits that will come to yourself and others from being a generous person, a person who gives of themselves, as well as an ethical person, a person who refrains from bringing any harm. Thinking about this again and again, one's mind will become relaxed and spacious. Problems will not be experienced as such. Difficulties will not be experienced as such. And one's mind will stay relaxed, open, and spacious. And this way, one will experience more happiness and experience ever fewer problems and difficulties. This, then, is a skillful way to train your mind.
파샤베나 아니 파 유고 제고르데 데 유샤바 메세 제고 바서 책으로 와 진행다 디스이 진비냠 개와 차고 가서 공원 삼로 나라 나 산주고 봐 토크쇼 디정이 디 칼라디 마 사디 심진데 무슨 디길 파 제유에서 뭐 컨트롤이야 아니 거도 저것도야라 펭귄이 컨트롤 펭귄이 했음 컨트롤 파주치도 제긴 셈비 삼로시 코고로 와 디 삼로디 진비냠 개와래 어 두스네 개와래